Senate will please come to order. Roll call.
Roll call for Thursday, February 5th. Anderson District 2.
Here.
Anderson District 28.
Here.
Barnard.
Here.
Bebout.
Here.
Burns.
Excused.
Case.
Present.
Christensen.
Here.
Coe.
Here.
Cooper.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Dockstetter. Driscoll.
Excused.
Emmerich.
Here.
Escobel.
Here.
Geis.
Here.
Hastert.
Here.
Hicks.
Here.
Johnson.
Excused.
Kinski.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Pappas.
Here.
Perkins.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Ross.
Here.
Rothfuss.
Here.
Scott.
Here.
Von Fladern.
Here.
Wasserberger.
Here.
President Nicholas.
Here.
27 present, 3 excused.
Prayers by Father Conkleton. Please join me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Play ball. Forgot the pledge. Will the reading clerk please read the Journal Committee report?
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February the 4th, 2015 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Jeff Wasserberger, Chairman.
You've heard the report. Are there any objections? There being none, the report is adopted. The doctor of the day is Dr. Banger, and we've also got Dr. McHugh from Cody. I don't see either of them here yet. And there's a nurse, which is Andrea Good from Cheyenne Regional Medical Center. Today in history, in 1927, the meadow lark was designated the state bird. Session status, today is the 18th day of the proposed 37-day session. Tomorrow, Friday, is the last day for bills reported out of Committee of the House of Origin. One thing about Curry's, got a lot of imagination. Messages from the House.
February the 4th, 2015, from the House of Representatives, message number 217, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Joint Resolution 9, repeal 17th Amendment 2, ayes 20, noes 38, excuse 2. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
February the 5th, 2015, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 12, engrossed, Game and Fish Violation Restitution, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Barnard, Cooper, and Kraft, excuse, Senator Johnson, Senator Cooper, Chairman. February the 5th, 2015, Mr. President, Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 13, engrossed, State Park Use of Fees, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Barnard, Cooper, and Kraft, excuse, Senator Johnson, Senator Cooper, Chairman.
We're at that order of business. Bills on second reading. Senator Case.
Mr. President, and maybe I should make it after you read the bill, but I do have an amendment to Senate File 43. It's just been distributed, Mr. President. I was going to ask that we take Senate File 43 and put it to the end of second reading today, if that is acceptable to you.
Without objection, Senate File 43, that's the Wyoming Telecommunications Act revision, will be laid at the end of the group of bills to be read.
Thank you.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was waiting for you to read in 110. I'm sorry.
Senate File 110. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, there are some rough edges on Senate File 110 that need to be addressed, I'm afraid, and we can't do it quickly. I'd ask, without objection, that it be re-referred to your Committee Number 11 journal, and we can take a look at it under the stairs.
That probably requires a vote. The motion is to re-refer Senate File 110 to the Journal Committee Number 11. All those in favor say aye. Point of order. How does that work?
Mr. President, I think it's Committee Number 12.
That's rude.
Mr. President, I believe Committee Number 12 is rules.
What committee did you ask to be put into?
Committee Number 11 Journal.
Did I say 12?
No. Mr. President, I'm just trying to confuse everybody. I withdraw my comment.
Well, this is an important bill with rough edges.
It is.
Apparently, the Journal Committee knows how to take the rough edges on it. So the motion on the floor is to re-refer Senate File 110 to the Rough Edges Committee Journal, Committee Number 11. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That motion is granted.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senate File 110 has been re-referred to the Rough Edge Committee, called the Journal Committee. I'll hand that back to you. Senate File 118, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 118, personal opportunity with employment responsibilities.
There are no amendments, no discussion. Senate File 118 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 120, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 120, Uniform Interstate Family Support Act.
We do have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read in the first reading amendment or the second reading amendment, number one.
Senate File 120, second reading amendment number one, page 9, line 4.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 120. This is the amendment that I told you that I had just received right before we started committee of the whole on this bill. These are technical corrections. It does bring in certain paragraphs or subparagraphs back into the bill because there was typos. So if you look at, like at the bottom of page 1, they bring in the words, the obligors, so that it's more, it's just simply more clear. So they're all technical corrections, and would ask for your favorable consideration.
Are there any discussion on the amendments? The question having been called, the question is on second reading amendment number 1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a quick question to the sponsor, and I'm sure he said this the other day, but I want to be clear. If we go into to other countries, if they do not follow due process, that everything we've done in this bill is null and void.
Senator Ross. That is correct. In fact, there's an exemption in there that if they don't, that if it's contrary to our law, it's not applicable. So you can think of some of those countries just right off the top of your head. And we wouldn't want to, first of all, they're not even with us necessarily in the Hague Convention or so forth. But if their laws are contrary to our laws, then no, it's not applicable at all.
Senate File 120, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 134. Senator Hicks.
Mr. President, I would request, if there's no objections, that we lay this back for one day.
If there are no objections and there being none, Senate File 134 is laid out. Is laid back for an additional day to be heard tomorrow on second reading. Now we're at Senate File 43, second reading of the bill. Yes.
Mike.
Senate File 43, Wyoming Telecommunication Act Revisions.
Senate File 43, we do have an amendment. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
Senate File 43, second reading amendment number 1, page 10, line 10.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 43. Mr. President, very simply, this goes into the page 10 of the bill. It's in section G. It's where the benchmark price is established by which the state supports universal service throughout Wyoming. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, the current benchmark price in the bill is $30. That $30 is a rough equivalency of the 130% that we have had in place. Since this clause was originally put in, which would have been in the 1995 Act. In the 1995 Act established that we would support telephone lines that cost more than 130% of the statewide average. Mr. Chairman, testimony in committee, and it's been represented that has worked out to be about $30. Up and down a little bit for the past several years. Mr. President, I'm arguing that $30 is too low, and that it is not unreasonable to ask for a benchmark of $35, and that for our rural customers that are having telephone service, this would reduce the amount of overall subsidies in Wyoming and say, look, if you're telephone service is $35 is going to cost more than $35, we will subsidize it to the level of $35, not the level of $30. So in essence, I'm raising rural rates by $5. And, Mr. Chairman, I think it's appropriate. I think two things to consider. It does cost more to serve rural communities and rural lines. It's especially the lines in outside of communities away from the local exchange because those loops are longer. And that's the cost we're talking about. It's the cost that is the basis of support from the USF. I would argue, Mr. President, that $5 in all these years, especially since it's been frozen around 30 for the past several, is not unreasonable and would be a step towards encouraging more competition and more viable alternatives in rural areas, because right now no one will compete if the phone price is too low. And it's not that it's costing the people of Wyoming less, it's just that the customer has a price that doesn't reflect the cost. I would ask for your support. It's a very modest increase of $5.
Mr. President, on and against this particular amendment, a couple of reasons, Mr. President. There's a balancing act here between what you can charge the rural folks and still maintain a complete system and what you can assess everybody, to support that and still maintain a system. The balance we struck was at 130%. Which is a significant premium in the rural areas and has led to an assessment that is in the $1.40 range on the other lines. That was the balance we struck in 1995, and it has worked over the years. It hasn't caused great troubles on either side. It hasn't made anybody's unaffordable. And I will say that if you raise the price in the rural areas, you may induce some more competition. But remember the discussion in Committee of the Whole about how in the topography, the various competing technologies simply cannot reach quite a number of the customers. And I know that's true in my area. I understand it's true in Senate District 2. I think it's true widely in the state. Because when you get very rough terrain, your signals from the others just don't reach. So there's a limit to how much good the competition can do you. You're still going to have areas where the only option is a landline or nothing. And, Mr. Chairman, by way of comparison with our rates and national rates, the national average local rate is $15.64. Wyoming is $25.27, which is the highest statewide local rate already. Only four other states have local rates above $20, in my information. No state other than Wyoming has average local rates above $23, and here we're seeking to jack them even further. So I would urge that we defeat this amendment.
President, we heard from one of the speakers yesterday about this bill and the great job that the people did that compromised it, and they all compromised and gave something and tried to get something that everybody would agree to. Now we're changing it to one group, and I think we should defeat this amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, Wyoming already has the highest rural rates of any state in the nation. This will just bring them up a lot higher. As we said before, we've had a compromise, and also we've worked under this 130% figure since the 90s. It's a reasonable thing. Everybody gets along with it all right. I hope we keep it the way it is.
Thank you, Mr. President. What's that saying about when you're in the best place to be in a fight is right in the middle of it, when you're heavily outnumbered? Is that right? Mr. President, here's the problem, is that the low rates, and they are relatively low, we are the least populated state, and we have the biggest area to cover, so we have the highest costs. Who should bear those costs? That's the question. What this amendment proposes is that we take a modest amount of increasing cost to folks that make choices about which telephone service they use, and by those choices impose costs on others. It's a moderate shift from $30 to $35 so that more costs can be borne by those who choose to live where they live, to have the technologies that they choose. And this notion that these people are without alternatives is not fundamentally flawed, Mr. President, but it's largely flawed because it just depends where you are. Yes, there are places that are unservable by wireless technology in Wyoming, but that is not as extensive as has been represented. And I think that is a great fallacy in the discussion. When you look at these small companies that will now be able to increase their collections from the Universal Service Fund, you look and look at their actual network, where those lines actually are and where they go, you look and you'll see that the vast majority do have alternatives, but the problem, because 90% are either in flatland or in a relatively urbanized community, even if it's only a few hundred people, Mr. President, there really are very few people that are that extreme last mile. And I am trying to get our thinking to move towards helping them, because when we have a system that moves too much money around, it takes too much money from all the people in Wyoming and gives it to too many people that have alternatives. We have to build roads to these to rural houses. We do it gladly. But, Mr. President, if they want to have electricity or other things, they have to pay for that. Mr. President, $5 is a choice that people make. They have choices in their telephone service like everything else, and I would urge the adoption of this amendment to achieve a better Wyoming, and appreciate it.
The question is on second reading amendment number one. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Amendment has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, the last amendment touched on it, but it wasn't really that relevant to it. But I do wish to report to the Senate that with this bill, you don't guarantee the local rates stay down. The testimony from the Public Service Commission in committee was with the worst-case scenario on what the feds may do and how it may play out, is that with the language right at the end of the bill, that you see they have some power to adjust things if the benchmark rate set doesn't stay the same. The worst case scenario is the local rate could go to $42.50 and the assessment to 2.65% from 1.4%. So if that happens, we may want to revisit this whole issue. But there's so much uncertainty, Mr. President, as to what the Fed's going to do and how it's going to play out. That's why you've got the relatively short 4-year sunset on this. But I want you to understand that if it's the worst possible result as the commission has computed it, it would raise the local rate to benchmark rate to $42.50 and the assessment to 2.65%.
We're back on the bill. Senate File 43, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business. Bills on third reading. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list, and I would move the following bills on the third reading consent list. Senate File 84, Enhanced Recovery, Carbon Dioxide Certification. Senate File 102, Medical Billing, Provisional Providers. Senate File 137, Farm License Plates. Senate File 141, State Budget Development. Senate File 142, Building Code Regulation.
Would any member like any of those bills removed from the consent list? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 84, Enhanced Recovery, Carbon Dioxide Certification. Senate File 102, Medical Billing, Provisional Providers. Senate File 137, Farm License Plates. Senate File 141, State Budget Development. And Senate File 142, Building Code Regulation. The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
On the consent list, Anderson District 2.
Aye.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns excused. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Driscoll excused, Emmerich,
aye.
Escobel,
aye.
Geis,
aye.
Hastert,
aye.
Hicks,
aye.
Johnson excused, Kinski,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Pappas,
aye.
Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Fladern, Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. On the consent list, 27 aye, 3 excused. Senate File 84. Are there any changes?
Case aye to no.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 84, 26 aye, 1 no, 3 excused. Senate File 102, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 102, 27 aye, 3 excused. Senate File 137, are there any changes? Closing vote?
No.
Scott, no. Closing case?
No.
Case aye to no. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. Senate File 137, 25 aye. 2 no, 3 excused. Senate File 141, are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing vote closed. Senate File 141, 27 aye, 3 excused. Senate File 142, are there any changes? Bebout, aye to no. Wasserberger, aye to no. Perkins, aye to no. Von Flatern, aye to no. Dockstetter, aye to no. Hicks, aye to no. Cooper, aye to no. Landon, aye to no.
Anderson, District 2, aye to no.
Anderson, District 2, aye to no. Coe, aye to no.
Peterson,
aye to no.
Anderson,
28, aye to no.
Nicholas, aye to no.
Nicholas, aye to no.
Ross,
aye to no. Christensen, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 142, 12 aye, 15 no, 3 excused.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority members of elected the Senate, Senate Files 84, 102, 137, and 141 have passed the Senate. Senate File 142, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority members of the elected to the Senate, Senate File 142 has failed to pass the Senate. Senate File 123, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 123, Collective Bargaining for Firefighters, sponsored by Senator Kinsey. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Are there any amendments?
Yeah.
There are no amendments. Discussion, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 123 and ask the body.
Let me read it in.
Senate File 123, third reading amendment number 1, page 1, line 3.
Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 123 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, we heard quite a little bit of discussion on this bill. And I think that one of the things that we did here is that, that binding arbitration works good in some communities. They don't have a problem with it. In other communities, they've got some heartburn. What this basically does, Mr. President, is allow for the corporate authority, basically your city council, to determine whether they want to go under binding or non-binding. And if it's working good for them and they just want to continue the way they've done, then they can vote within 5 days of receipt of the notice that the firemen want to do collective bargaining one way or the other and proceed from there. So, Mr. President, that's what it does. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment, Senator Kinsky.
Mr. President, thank you. I appreciate the senator from Goshen County's efforts to help find the kind of consensus or middle ground or compromise that we were looking for when last we left off on the debate on this. And I think the word that had been used is looking for a release valve of some kind. And I think the last two of the four amendments that you will have coming before you today do that in a manner far superior to this particular amendment or the one from the senator from Goshen County to follow. The last two, I think, will assuage some of the concerns that we heard earlier in the debate. With respect to this particular amendment, I have two concerns. The first, as discussed on the Committee of the Whole, part of the problem with the current system is that it enables governing bodies to kick the can down the road a little bit further, a little bit further, a little bit further until somebody ends up holding all those cans. And this still does the same thing in that it allows a corporate governing body, who is elected after all to make the tough decisions, to sidestep them by saying, we're just going to pass that off to an arbitrator. So in a way, it's kind of like it reminds me of a certain state out on the West Coast where any time their body is faced with a tough issue, they just stick it on the ballot and say, we'll let somebody else handle that, and we'll let the cup pass from us. I think also it's still, by doing this, it allows the governing body of sidestepping their responsibility for accountability to the voters who elected them to assume control of the entire budget, and then for the department on a biennium basis, if they're not treated right, to make that case to the voters. And that's really where it lies, not with a binding arbitrator. And so I would ask for the defeat of this amendment, and let's look beyond this to an advisory role for the arbitrators to the governing body and making the case to the voters and holding those governing bodies accountable for that, which is where the real accountability should be. And in conclusion, again, I think we've got two subsequent amendments that really address some of the concerns better than this. But again, I appreciate the senator's good efforts to help find that compromise or that middle ground.
Senator Von Platter.
Thank you, Mr. President. Privilege of the floor, please.
You may have it.
I just remind the body that referencing future legislation, as in amendments or bills to proceed or bills that are being discussed, is not our usual customary way of handling things. So we're dealing with this amendment. Kind of like stick with this amendment.
I think the caution is to address the amendment before without reference to other amendments of each amendment. But in some instances, I'm going to allow Senator Scott to share his wisdom.
Mr. President, this is a place where some of our debate rules sometimes cause a bit of difficulty. Technically, the caution that we're supposed to stick the amendment in front of us is accurate. You do need to understand when there may be better alternatives coming so you can take a quick look at them. Mr. President, we have generally done it by saying there are coming amendments rather than referring to them specifically, but that's been the custom. I think it's probably a wise custom, but I don't think the reference was made was greatly out of line. It was just a little more explicit than we usually do, Mr. President.
I think.
Mr. President, my apologies to the body.
With respect to this, I think the guidance is, though, that you can always say there's a better approach to this, there's a better solution to this. And I think our colleague from Casper is right. There has to be some flexibility so that you at least alert your colleagues that there's another approach. But it was an appropriate discussion. But we do have to remember that we're debating the amendment before. We're on third reading amendment number one, Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have always maintained in my career as a legislator for the state of Wyoming that when asked about what I can think of the bodies and other legislators and their actions, and I have always said that I believe that everyone has the true interest of Wyoming at heart. I think we disagree on how we're going to get there sometimes. And this is a great example of where I can certainly agree with the sponsor of the bill on the amendment and resisting it for a little different reasons, but I certainly feel that this still leaves it as non-binding and would ask you to resist the amendment.
We're on third reading number one. We're back to the sponsor for his second and final time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, in regards to the discussion from the good senator from the northern part of the state, I think with all due respect that the voters still can hold anybody accountable, and specifically on their vote as to whether it's binding or non-binding. That's as simple as just a little bit of public information, and they can make, if they want to have that single issue vote of them passing the buck or kicking the can down the road, If it's something that raises to the extent that a voter is going to vote for that particular issue, it'll be brought out in spades, so to speak, just from the standpoint that that specific vote was taken. And so it illuminates the actions of the board and puts it right out in the forefront as far as how they decide to conduct business. So they're always accountable, and they're always accountable to the voter. As far as it leaving it binding or non-binding, that's entirely up, and it's entirely optional. And this, I think, in some regard, pays attention to our home rule doctrine, although it's not specifically in this case. I guess it has been determined that that you can have binding arbitration. It does allow the it does allow the local authority to make that determination, and it's not determined by us in Cheyenne. It's determined where government is the best, and that's closest to the people.
We're on third reading amendment number one. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We're now on second reading amendment. Excuse me, this amendment number two to third reading. Will the clerk please read in the amendment?
Senate file 123, third reading amendment number two, page one, line three.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number two to Senate file 123 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, this takes it from binding to non-binding, but it puts some sideboards in. And the sideboards are, first, that the arbitrator shall consider the following. First, they shall not consider any increases in wages that exceeds the actuarial assumption for wage increases of the Wyoming retirement system. And for the body's consideration, that's around 4% now. It's probably going to drop down to around 3% because of the history that we've had in state wages. Now, that's divisible from the other two. The other ones are things that they shall consider, and that's the Wyoming rate of inflation, the Wyoming state rate of inflation for state employees for the preceding 5 years. So that's state employees. That determines firefighters should be in the realm of what state employees are, and so that's what the arbitrator would consider. And it says in the Romanet 3 that this is going to last for 5 years, the agreement. I think that's important because the city council isn't coming back every 2 years and going through negotiations, that it's going to last for a while, and they can make their negotiations, and they know for 5 years they can figure out how they're going to budget for the next 5 years instead of knowing that every 2 years they're going to come in and they're going to get hit up alongside the head again with more labor negotiations. And I think it's good for the firemen because they know what they're going to have for the next 5 years. So I think that, in that regard, Mr. President, is probably a win-win. Of all of these, I think the most important to me is Romanet I, and that's holding our retirement system harmless from local labor negotiations. Because what happens in these circumstances, if it goes above 4%, let's say you get 7 or 8%, year after year after year, what happens is that you have an actuarial problem with being able to afford the retirement system for these individuals. And so I just want to make sure that that stays in balance, that we don't have a problem like we did with school employees where they got like a 15 or 20% raise and we're coming back in and trying to augment our system. So this is just For that reason, Mr. President, I think it's important that we keep those wage increases below that level.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, several questions. I thought I understood the proponent of the amendment to say that this moves from a non-binding to a binding arbitration. I'm not quite convinced how mechanically that works in the amendment. I couldn't track that in, but that's probably because I haven't had enough time to look at it, so I am concerned about that. Second, Mr. President, exceeds the actuarial assumption for wage increases the Wyoming retirement system. My question is that figure readily available so that we know precisely at all times what that is? Similar question, on line 17 of the amendment, Wyoming state rate of wage inflation for state employees, is that a readily available figure? And then, Mr. President, I would like to say, so I don't have to get up again, that I think this amendment may be on the right track in terms of a compromise if it allows a binding arbitration and sets some parameters in what that can do. I think that will induce the parties to negotiate more effectively amongst themselves because there's limitations on what can be imposed. I think that may be virtuous, but it still does allow the non-binding arbitration. And then, frankly, Mr. President, although I think it maybe could use a little wordsmithing before the bill passes, I think the five-year term is a good idea so that you don't come back all the time. And what I would hope is there would be eventually some kind of a system where if the two parties agreed in during the five-year term, they could make some changes if they find something that they've both agreed doesn't work, or frankly, if we get a runaway inflation rather than what we're seeing in recent years. But, Mr. President, I think this amendment has considerable virtue.
Senator Ron Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just bring to the body's attention, because I'm really not sure myself, but on this, they would be gambling that there was no deflation. I mean, they would be, they'd throw the skin in the game and say, should it be less than, we'd actually take a cut in our wages. It also doesn't deal with benefits. It doesn't deal with vacation time, things that benefits would encompass. So I'm not really sure how I feel about this amendment, but I just bring those to your attention.
Senator Hastert. Thank you, Mr. President. On amendment, it certainly leaves it as non-binding. And Mr. President, members of the Senate, I'm going to kind of go from the bottom up on this amendment. And when you look at lines 20, three little I, and you go to the 5 years, my concern there is that there could be some merit, some discussion about that, certainly. But my concern is the 5 years and the uncertainty this, with the cities and the amounts that that they'll have to work with. And I certainly have a real concern over the 5 years. When you go to two little I, you consider the rate of inflation. That's something that's already, I'm told that in the arbitration, or in, excuse me, in the negotiations, that's something that's already considered. That's something that they already do and already work on. And then, Mr. President, members of the Senate, in the first one, when you talk about not consider any increases in wages that exceeds the actuarial assumption, I think that one there would be very problematic. Now, I think the tall senator from Natrona County asked if that information was readily available, and maybe it should be passed out, Mr. President. But I did ask the entity that controls that for what that would be. And for the Plan B fund, that actual assumptions go from 7% at age 20 to 6.5% at age 35, 5.5% at age 40, 5% at age 50, 4.75, and 4.25 down to 60. So I think this would you're asking for something here that is very problematic, very difficult for the cities to consider. And I really think that this is going to make things very complicated for the municipalities, and would really ask you to take a look at it before you consider voting for that.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, thank you. Again, I would agree with my friend, the senator from Sweetwater County, in two respects. First, that again, it's heartening to see how we're all working together to find what is in the best interest of the state. What I would say is that, first, with respect to the 5 years, those who have been around a while know you can go from can't find employees to hire to laying people off in the span of 5 years. And I'm concerned that a governing body being locked in for 5 years, when most of them are on an annual, let alone a biennial budget, might create too much inflexibility in the system. As to the other factors, I would say, again, with my friend from Sweetwater County, these are already considered. The problem is they are being considered by an arbitrator who comes from out of town or out of state relative to the union who hires an attorney from a state south of us, flying in one instance an economist from the West Coast, and they look at all these factors and more, including the infrastructure appropriations from this body as evidence as to how much funding is available for raises and benefit increases. So this amendment, while I applaud the intent, takes us still in the wrong direction because we're still talking about an arbitrator making these decisions. And the other issue, the other problem is these cost of living things, they end up being, sometimes you start out hoping they'll be the ceiling, they end up being the floor. It's very easy for an arbitrator to say, that's where we're going to go to, and they just go right to the top. The other final issue that we've had in arbitration is, and cost of living indices in Wyoming, all we have for our city in northern Wyoming includes other larger communities, such as Campbell County, and it will consistently show inflation much higher than what we know because we're local and live there is actually the case. So again, these decisions are good. These kind of factors are good. They should be weighed by the governing body in the course of its determination of what's best for the entire community and all city employees, and I urge the defeat of the amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Scott.
Mr. President, for my second time, I think a key piece of information here is the fact that the actuarial assumption for wage increases isn't a single number, but is one that's based on age, and you can't really use that or you're going to get an age discrimination complaint that would be valid. So for that reason, Mr. President, I really compliment the bringer of the amendment for some creative thinking, which is the kind of thing that's needed in this area. But I don't think this particular amendment, as written on third reading, is going to work. So I, too, would stand opposed to the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment. We're back to the movement for his final and second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, a little clarification here in Romanet I. It does not say the actuarial assumption for wage increases of Fireman B. So it says for the increases of the Wyoming retirement system. That's an overall number when you have the Wyoming retirement system. You don't have the stair-stepping in incremental wages. So you don't have the discrimination problem, just to make sure that that's clear. But, Mr. Chairman, at this time, there is a flaw in the amendment because I've got my notes here where I made it binding. Didn't happen to show up in the amendment. So, Mr. Chairman, because I wanted to balance this amendment with the binding, area. I'm going to withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
The movement having withdrawn the amendment, there are no objections. Third reading amendment number 2 has been withdrawn from consideration. Takes us to third reading amendment number 3. If the reading clerk would please read in the amendment.
Senate file 123, third reading amendment number 3. Delete the first Meyer third reading amendment.
Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, thank you. Mr. President, I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 123 and ask the body for favorable consideration. Members of the body, if we could walk through this very briefly, the amendment itself, and then I'll speak to the amendment, but I would turn your attention first to page 1 of the bill itself, where we are inserting on page 1, line 3, the language providing an exception to the binding arbitration requirement. Thereafter, we would go to page 3, line 12. And after the first word, B, we would insert the following language. Binding as to personal safety equipment, but... And then after body, inserting the as to all other issues. And I'm sorry, in the preceding line, striking the word arbitration. So after these portions of it, lines 8 through 14 of the amendment, the bill would now read on page 3, starting on line 11, shall be submitted to arbitration, which shall be binding as to personal safety equipment, but non-binding and advisory only to the governing body as to all other issues, I believe. Yes, as to all other issues. And then the final portion of the amendment goes down to 2710107, lines 13, 19 and 20, which currently reads, provided, however, arbitration shall be non-binding, and now reads instead, shall be subject to the provisions of Wyoming Statute 2710105. That would be this amendment, which says that we are binding as to personal safety equipment, non-binding as to all other matters. And, Mr. President, members of the body, this is designed to address the concerns that we heard in the prior discussion, where the good senator from the Ivory Tower and others were saying, we get that the safety valve of the accountability for the governing body is gone, but there's a desire for some other safety valves. And there was some fair amount of discussion about safety. With respect to safety, I would point out again that the local and state governments have always made sure that all of our public safety departments, volunteer or paid, are well-equipped and well-trained. There are additional standards, NFPA, ISO, OSHA, that assure that that's the case as well. Nonetheless, I think it's important that we assuage those concerns, and so this amendment would say that it will be binding as to personal safety equipment. If a city council is not providing appropriate bunker gear or breathing apparatus, then that should be something perhaps that is binding. It's hard for me to imagine that that would be the case, given particularly that it's by and large funded by Homeland Security grants and grants from this body. But nonetheless, it's designed to assuage that concern that perhaps safety might be left behind by the governing body. So we'll submit that to binding arbitration. And I would urge the body's favorable consent to amendment number 3.
Discussion on the amendment. Oh. Senator Kraft.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman. I'm a little confused about how we can separate out safety equipment as binding and everything else as non-binding. Because information we received from previous negotiations is very often it's an interplay. It's back and forth. I've heard of some instances where the firefighters said, you know, We would rather have safety equipment than a pay raise this year. How do you do that if you've got one that's binding and one that's non-binding? So that's a question I would submit to you. Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. On and for this amendment addresses the multitude of emails and phone calls that I received. Everybody was worried about personal safety for the firemen, and as all of us are. This addresses that issue that they brought up, and many, many of them brought up safety for the firemen, not other issues. But they wanted personal safety equipment to be binding, and this addressed it. I'd urge your vote on amendment number three.
Senator Rothfuss. Mr. Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I certainly do appreciate the consideration in this amendment, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to be on and against the amendment. It's just that it doesn't go far enough, and honestly, I agree with my colleague that it then becomes confusing. If it had stopped short of saying equipment, Mr. President, so that it was personal safety and meant the overall personal safety, then a lot of things could be pulled in on that. The personal safety, as I understand it, is more about how many people you have on the job at a given time, who's there, how many hours they work. A lot of those types of things are really at the core of the personal safety of our firefighters. The personal equipment is certainly a component of it, but it's not the key piece. And to isolate that and have collective bargaining just for do I have a proper respirator device is insufficient, Mr. President. It would need to be a full package, but I certainly do appreciate the effort made to address that consideration, but it falls far short. And I also have a concern on line 17 of the amendment where it says, and shall be subject to. When you look at the language that surrounds that, it's a little bit difficult to understand how that would be implemented because you're inserting that into page 3, lines 18 through 20, which indicates that arbitration shall proceed pursuant to the provisions of the Uniform Arbitration Act, provided, however, that arbitration shall be non-binding. So you have a clause there that indicates that the arbitration shall be non-binding. We're then adding an and clause here, and shall be subject to the provisions where we indicate that there's an instance where it is binding. There's a little bit of internal conflict in that language, Mr. President, that I'm concerned about. But whether that was resolved or not, it still wouldn't address the larger concern that personal safety of firefighters is a much, much, much broader consideration than simply the personal safety equipment that they're wearing at the time of a fire. So I appreciate the step towards addressing that consideration, but, Mr. President, this falls short, and I'm afraid that it's not sufficient to get us to where we need to be.
Senator Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. President. I had similar concerns because I was wondering, what do you do if there's a disagreement between the firefighters and the corporate body as to what constitutes personal safety equipment? I imagine there could be some disagreement as to what is or what isn't personal safety equipment. That's a concern that I have. Thank you.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just have really appreciated the comments made on this particular amendment and wanted to rise and thank the sponsor for trying to work the last couple of days on an effort to land us somewhere in the middle on this bill. I think we've done that. I think this is a little bit of the compromise that we were all searching for. I agree with my friend from Laramie. It probably doesn't get us all the way there, but it certainly pulls that rein in a little bit and recognizes that safety factor that my colleague from Casper brought up. That's been chief concern in all the emails I've received is this safety factor, and this does address that. So, Mr. President, I'm on and for this amendment. I think it improves the bill and gets us back toward a little bit of a compromise. Thank you.
Senator Hassett, for your second time.
I haven't gotten up yet. Thank you, Mr. President. Just to expound a little bit, and I also applaud what we're direction, but really feel this falls short. I was, you know, looking at a list of items that are outside of personal, and you talk about physical and physical fitness standards. These are all things that are part of negotiations and ultimately part of an arbitrator's. The EMT services, community services, such as car seats, life jackets, CPR, smoke alarms, hazmat, high-angle rescue, bunker equipment, most all rescue programs, the safety committee, training, apparatus committee, the NFPA standards for service. Those are all, and then the list goes on. Those are all things that, so this is like, you know, it takes, leaves out such a large portion of it that it still leaves me with concerns over that. So, thank you.
On the amendment, discussion has been completed. The question is on amendment number 3. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Chairs in doubt. All those in favor, please stand. Those opposed, please stand. That vote was 18-8. The amendment has failed. Or if it's passed, excuse me, the amendment has passed. Third reading amendment number 3 is passed the Senate. We're now to Fourth Amendment. If the reading clerk would please read the amendment in.
Senate File 123, Third Reading Amendment Number 4, page 3, line 14.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move Third Reading Amendment Number 4 to Senate File 123. Members of the Senate, what this does, in our statutes right now, under civil statutes, we have 15-5101 through 15-5-122, and it's a very complete, very worthwhile and well-thought-out set of statutes we have in our Wyoming law, and it applies specifically to police and fire, towns of 5,000 or more population. Essentially, it would apply to this bill if this bill should move forward. And, Mr. President, the purpose is to be sure and include the language of 15-5101 through 15-5122, which is a civil service statute, and would apply to this bill if it should move forward. And I ask for your favorable consideration.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, I thank the senator from Fremont County again in search of that compromise and that what was referred to in the prior round of debate as a release valve, and the concern that, a governing body, while inclined always to treat all employees well, but that niggling residue of doubt. Civil service, which applies to all of the 6 cities affected by binding arbitration and any future cities with a paid department. Here's what civil service does. All new hiring must go through an independently appointed commission by competitive exam. All promotions must be determined by that commission by competitive exam. That commission must maintain a hiring list. If a city wishes to fire anybody, reduce their pay, or reduce their grade, it can only be for cause. And it can only be for cause after written notice to the employee, and the employee has an opportunity for hearing, and the employee has an opportunity to go to district court. And so creating this cross-reference in here is another way to bring that reassurance to the table that even though all other issues are subject to non-binding arbitration with the final determination by the governing body, now personal safety equipment and civil service protections will remain firmly in place with the prior amendment being binding arbitration and this amendment giving them a remedy before an independent civil service panel and ultimately district court. I would urge favorable consideration of the amendment for this second of the 2 release valves that were desired in our prior debate.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. A question for the sponsor. My understanding is that this really doesn't change anything. This is just pulling in a reference back to current civil service statute. And I'm curious from the majority floor leader whether there is any difference in how the statute will be interpreted after this is in place, or if this is simply a clarification to kind of reiterate what would already be in statute.
Any discussion before the movement takes us second time? Senator Perkins.
Another question I'd have is as I'm looking through those statutes, it seems to me that it applies to, this is just a general question, it applies to police and fire officers unless they're exempted under the article. And I'm struggling to understand whether they seem to me it may be already been under this article unless they're somehow exempted out. It does provide for exemptions out of those, but there's all kinds of things in here already for police and fire. So I'm trying to figure out, and maybe the sponsor can help us understand this, whether this is actually already available. Because it appears to me that firemen and police may already be covered by this. So help us with that.
Any further discussion? Senator Bebout for your final second time.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll try to answer those questions, and the key word is interpretive. And I think that the arguments made that it's in there are valid. However, there's no doubt about it. If we put it in here, that we understand and that this statute will apply to this particular bill in this situation. Could it? Possibly. But this clarifies that, and there's no doubt that it would.
We're on amendment number 4. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has passed. We're now back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members of the Senate, on the bill, I think that there was some movement made and some attempts to make. My concern is we're still quite a distance away from really on the full aspects of on the safety concerns. When you talk about we added the personal equipment, but they still left out a substantial amount of issues that address into public safety. And really, Mr. President, members of the Senate, that we're still limiting the right of the city and the firefighters to have a meaningful conversation about the working conditions for the firefighters. Using the good sponsor's own words, this is kind of still has all the has the communities holding all the cans and really, and we talked about the pendulum, but this is really still leaves that to very much one-sided. You know, there's still the discussion of out-of-state arbitrators. I have seen where, quite a few of them have been in-state. And members listed from the legislature. And Mr. President, members of the Senate, I would still ask you to resist the bill. I remind you of the document that I passed out when we first started talking about the bill, and you look at the employment numbers and the pay scales for firefighters. I think somebody talked about some exorbitant salaries, but this document that I had prepared from a staff shows that Wyoming firefighters are one of the lowest paid in the region. They're not greedy. They're not looking for anything out of bounds. I think that the main thing here is we have a system that has worked for 50 years, and we don't have a statewide problem with this issue. And it's basically not broken, and I don't think we need to fix it. And I'll ask you to resist this bill. Thank you.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. President, from time to time we get a topic like this, and it seems like from my perspective, and maybe my perspective is wrong, but it seems like both sides are saying my way or the highway. We had some effort to move it a little bit toward a compromise. I don't think we've gotten there. This process has worked for a long time as far as the determining the wages for firemen. I think there are some problems with it. But as this bill sits right now, I don't think the problems are fixed. I think probably the thing that we probably should do is for leadership to determine which committee this should go to in an interim topic, that these discussions are held in a little more earnest over a little bit more time, with a lot more input. And maybe we'll come up with a bill that really takes into account all the different things that are out there. Because at this point in time, I think we're in the firefighters are in the driver's seat. And with the passage of this bill, the towns are in the driver's seat. And, Mr. President, we need to do a better job than that. We need to be able to get together over the course of the next year and try to figure out the compromises that will actually let these people work towards something that's fair for the firemen and for the cities. We haven't got it yet. And we tried, but it's just not there. And so, Mr. President, at the beginning of this process, I was an aye vote on this because I thought we could actually move toward the center. We just marginally moved toward the center, Mr. President. The pendulum has swung way too far, and I think that we need to prevail upon leadership to assign it to a committee that will actually get us in the middle, and we can all walk away with everybody being a little bit mad, but everybody being a little bit happy with what they end up with.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Kinski.
Mr. President, thank you. First, with respect to the, I'd like to start with respect to the handout that my good friend from Sweetwater County presented us with a couple of days ago, which purported to show, and it does in fact show, that the annual mean wage of 420 paid full-time firefighters in the state of Wyoming is $39,560. And as has been pointed out a number of times, I have some experience at arbitration in these matters, and I dug back through our steamer trunk full of exhibits and came up with this recent 2014 data. And I will not identify the cities. I'll give you generally where they're from. This is from a northern Wyoming community, excluding the chief, taking all wages, not just the shown in the table, but all the add-ons and upgrades and extra overtime and extra pay, the benefits, average without the chief, compensation per year, $75,826. Let me turn then to another community, a larger community in the state of Wyoming, and give you average compensation by employment position with benefits. Battalion chiefs, three of those, average $123,583. Division chiefs, three of those, average $126,976. Lieutenants, 24 of those, average $110,726. Engineers, 21, average $104,000. Firefighters, 39, average $90,472. You can see those are consequential numbers, and you can understand that the governing body needs to have more say in what happens with these numbers than what an outside, out-of-state arbitrator may come in and do. Because once those wages are set in February, by law, that notice comes 4 months before the balance of the budget is set. After that's all put together, every other city employee gets in line with the same expectation for the same kind of increase and the same kind of benefits package. And God bless them, it is real tough to say no once that happens. And you get what economists call just classic cost-push inflation in the cost of government. So rather than turning those decisions over to an unelected outside arbitrator, we need to put the governing body in the saddle and make them accountable for those decisions. I believe that we have listened and addressed the two principal concerns that we heard in the debate before, safety and job protection. And those are now firmly ensconced in the bill by virtue of how it's been amended. And I would urge the body's favorable consideration of SF 123.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I certainly understand the concerns that we're facing with Senate File 123, and I appreciate my good friend's suggestion to look at this in depth in the interim and potentially try and find some better middle ground. Because, Mr. President, what I'm still hung up on is the safety aspect of this. And when I hear salaries being laid out as the primary driver and a concern that we want to make sure that somebody out of state doesn't determine the outcomes, but that a council that is considering the budget is determining the outcomes, I missed the part where we talked about the importance of safety. And it's one thing to have a salary going up, but if at the same time you're cutting back on the number of personnel that you need to safely run an operation, you can cut costs while increasing the salary. You've got some people happy, but overall, Mr. President, we don't have a safe environment. There are genuine concerns that this Senate File 123 is aimed at addressing. I recognize that, and I appreciate the sponsor for bringing it and for us having this wonderful discussion on it so that we understand and are more aware of the issues. This piece of legislation, regrettably, does not get us to the solution. It gets us towards the solution because it started this conversation, and I do believe that we need to look at this in the interim, really address it, find a way that we can consider and solve the issues that have been raised while at the same time recognizing that we cannot lead to a shortcoming or shortfall in the safety of our firefighters through amendments in statute. As such, Mr. President, I would urge the body to reject this legislation, to let us do our work in the next interim, to come back with something better that's a compromise that is that middle ground instead of the pendulum simply swinging too far in the other direction.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, thank you. I don't want to belabor too long, but I've listened for three different readings on this bill, and it's one that has conflicted me maybe as much as any of the bills that we've seen in several years. But, you know, ultimately, it's our job to represent our districts back home. I mean, that's what we come down here to do, and I have greatly appreciated the energy and the work that the sponsor has done. Have we pulled it back far enough to make me comfortable? I don't think quite. I don't think we're quite there. I've got to say, Mr. President, that I've got city government officials up in my hometown. I've got people on emails, and they're just not for this bill. That is a gauge. I mean, we gauge what we get from back home, and frankly, I haven't gotten a whole lot of mail saying, whatever you do, pass this one. I appreciate the words from my colleague from the East. This is an important issue. And maybe it deserves just a little bit more conversation. Thank you, Mr. President.
Question. Senator Perkins.
Thank you. I'll be brief, Mr. President, so we can get to the vote on this. Just two points of information and maybe some frame of reference. First of all, I was puzzling over the civil service, Mr. President, and I did find the answer in 15.5.102 establishes the Civil Service Commission, and there it establishes for fire department Civil Service Commission. In each incorporated municipality, maintaining a paid fire department having a population of more than $4,000. So while it would seem that the last amendment was a move towards the middle and end, I think that most of the paid firemen are already there. So I don't know that that was much a move to the middle. I think as you look and as you think about whether to vote for this or not, each of us represent various constituencies. As you think about that, when you talk, you know, in our little community in the center of the state, the firefighters do some things that a lot of firefighters do, but not all firefighters do. We have a river that runs through the center of our town, and that we enjoy these days. And
And for example, our firefighters out there, when there's a, we lose probably 3 or 4 people a year in that river for various reasons. And you see those fire, we, in fact, there's times we've almost lost firefighters out there practicing for those reasons. We've lost, we lost a public safety officer, policeman, who dived into the river to save someone a few years ago, and we ended up losing him. There was one down, I think, in a little bit east of us that had happened. And so, you know, these guys go out and they, these guys and gals go out and they work hard. And in some places they have, you know, most of our towns, they not only fight fires in town, they fight, they join in and join out wildfires. They participate in lake, river rescues and lake rescues and other types of rescues. So when you get down there, just remember that it's one of those things as you think about this and as we discuss it. You know, are we creating a situation where one size fits all with this bill? And I don't know. It's been an interesting discussion. We have, each have come our own frame of references, but just keep those in your thoughts as you vote today.
Final discussion. Senator Kinski, for your second time.
Thank you, members of the Senate. I will agree with everything that we've heard about the brave work that the men and women of our paid fire departments do. And I started out this discussion several days ago by saying that this is not about that. We applaud them for the heroic work that they do every day. It's the same work performed by other public safety agencies that do not have collective bargaining, that do not have binding arbitration, and are taken care of well by the state and local governments. Our volunteer firefighters, our sheriffs, our police, DCI. There are many public safety people, including the men and women of the National Guard. Our men and women in uniform do not have mandatory collective bargaining nor mandatory binding arbitration. So it's not about the heroism and it's not about the safety, because we grant that the safety is important and we applaud them for the heroism. What it is about is, why is there one particular group of employees, cities and towns only, that has collective bargaining rights and binding arbitration rights when no other employees in the state of Wyoming do? And the impact that that has on a local governing body in terms of the abrogation of its duty to be responsible and accountable to the voters that elected them for their budget, and the fiscal responsibility being delegated inappropriately and unconstitutionally to an outside arbitrator who never has to face the voters. I would remind this body that we have, nonetheless, retained largely intact the entirety of the collective bargaining statute. The right to meet and demand a reopener of the contract remains in place. The right to sit and bargain with the city council remains in place. The right to reduce that to writing in an agreement remains in place. And the right to seek the guidance of an arbitrator remains in place, with being binding as to personal safety issues, non-binding as to the economic issues. I have reviewed every arbitration decision in the state of Wyoming that I can get my hands on, and there is not a one that is about safety. It's about money, pensions, benefits, wages. I reviewed every contract in the state of Wyoming. There is some discussion about safety here and there, but of the 40 or 50 or 24 pages, it's largely devoted to money, benefits, pension, vacation, time off, taking sick leave accruals, and how many folks get paid to perform grievances, negotiations, and that sort of activity. The focus of these discussions is not about safety, it's about money. Nor should safety be the haggling back and forth like a couple of folks arguing over the price of a rug. That safety should be number one. It should be first, and we've made sure that that's the case in this bill. We preserve the right of collective bargaining while restoring the governing body to its accountability to the voters. This bill, I believe, strikes the right balance, and I would urge your favorable consideration.
Will the chief clerk please call the roll?
Anderson, District 2?
No.
Anderson, District 28?
Aye.
Barnard?
No.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns, excused. Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe? Cooper? Kraft? Dockstetter? Driscoll excused. Emmerich? Escobel? Geis? Hastert? Hicks? Johnson excused. Kinski?
Aye.
Landon? Meyer? Pappas? Perkins? Peterson? Ross? Rothfuss? Scott? Von Platern? Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 14 aye, 13 no, 3 excused.
Senate File 123, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 123 has failed to pass the Senate. Senate File 129. Want to read in? Senator Hastert.
Immediate reconsideration.
I think they're going to move it back one day.
And kill it dead. It's remissing.
Senate File 129, third reading of the bill.
Senate File 129, Medicare Share Plan, sponsored by Senator Von Flatiron, be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment.
Present.
Senator Von Flatiron.
Without objection, I'd ask that Senate File 129 be laid back for the final vote.
Pardon? Chief Clerk simply didn't hear the motion. I think the motion was... So the request was to lay it back for one more day?
That's true, Mr. President. There are at least 3 members missing.
There are 3 members. Okay. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. President. And I'm not actually objecting, but what I want to do and share with the members of the Senate is we've done a lot of this in the past week or two, and it's been in an area where we felt we needed to have further discussion and opportunities on important, complicated bills. I'm going to support this, but I just want the Senate to know and understand that, you know, these decisions have to be made, and the longer we put them off, it just gets to a point where, because of frustration, we lose the real intent of what the bills are all about. So this makes a lot of sense. A lot of these issues that have been debated several times on this particular bill will probably be redebated tomorrow, and that's a process. So ultimately, Mr. President, we support the process. The process is that you can remove it and lay it back without objection. I'm not objecting. I just want our fellow senators to consider this in the future and how we do this and what we do with that. And also, Mr. President, while I'm standing, I want to compliment the Senate on the level and quality of the debate on the previous bill, a sensitive issue, an important issue, and I think all of you handled yourself very well. Thank you, Mr. President.
The request is made, since there are 3 members that have been excused today, to lay back Senate File 129 for one additional day, so it will be heard on third reading tomorrow. Without objection, it's so ordered. Senate File 146, the reading clerk, third reading of the bill. Mr. Vice President.
Senate File 146, Spending Policy Amendments, sponsored by Senator Nicholas. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. If the clerk would please read in amendment number 1.
Senate File 146, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 4.
We've read it. Okay. Senator Nicholas. Is it? No? Oh, excuse me. Got to read who wrote the book. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, will the reading clerk read in the First Amendment? Okay. Mr. Vice President, I bring some amendments today, and this is to have a discussion. Mr. President, Vice President, I would move third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 146 and ask the body turn to the second page because that's where the guts of the amendment is. And the reason I bring this amendment, Mr. Vice President, is that this particular bill goes in and earmarks almost $2 billion worth of a trust fund and the revenue off of it in one section. And that's our permanent mineral trust fund. And I deal with that. And I thought we needed to have some discussion about where we actually wanted to do earmarking if we're going to earmark the revenue off of $2 billion of our permanent mineral trust fund. And make no doubt, that's exactly what we're doing with this bill, is that we're hijacking $2 billion of that fund and saying this is the best place to spend that revenue. And that's the fund that, if we look at it, it's one of our three legs of our revenue coming into the state, our property taxes, our sales taxes, and the revenue off our PMTF. And we divert these funds out of our general fund stream, and we put it into new spending in the SIPA account. And that new spending is primarily for one-time spending. And we do it under the context of the next budget year, coming into that budget year with a $460 million anticipated deficit. And the question really is that if we're going to earmark the revenue that would be general funds that could pay part of that deficit in the new spending, let's have some discussion about what this body really thinks that spending should be. So, Mr. President, Vice President, at the first time in this is that we allow 33 1/3% to continue in the SIPA account, realizing that there is some one-time spending that could be derived by the governor. And we could go along with, even in face of almost a half a billion dollar deficit. We're talking about $90 million more or less every year in this diversions. We have a third of it go to the common school account in the permanent land funds. And then we have a third go to highways, half of that to the state and half of that to local governments. As a grant program. The grant program basically is on the first page for the local governments. It's a ranking program. It goes back to cities, towns, and counties. So this, Mr. Vice President, is an alternative to the structure that we have currently in the bill of that $90 million a year going to new capital construction or new one-time funding. And frankly, if we got a lot of money, like we have had in the last few years, this particular bill pretty much memorializes what we've done in the past. But the past isn't the future. We know that we've got that deficit looking us square in the face. And I think we need to take a second breath to figure out, do we want to invest in highways? Do we want to invest in our schools? Or do you want to continue to spend money on new projects when we're facing a deficit?
Thanks, Senator Meyer. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, on and against the amendment. Folks, we have used, and I use the word earmarking to describe the events that take in this bill, but it's important to understand that the funds are being earmarked to accounts that support the general fund. So the first earmarking, if you will, is to the general fund. The second earmarking is to the rainy day account, which supports the general fund expenditures. And the final earmarking is to the SIPA account, which are unexpended funds to be appropriated. Now, with respect to the SIPA account, it makes sense to put this allocation to the SIPA because the SIPA does not profile the revenues until they've arrived. And part of the difficulty that we've had in administering the revenues coming off of the permanent mental trust fund, part of the difficulty that we've had is that we've had this area of income which is described as anticipated but unforecasted capital gains. And as we exist, as the budget exists today, those monies are automatically swept into the LISR account because of budget sweeps. And what this does is say, wait a minute, time out. Let's put some of it into the general fund, some of it into the rainy day account for longer range, and then put some into the SIPA. And it makes sense because those are accounts that require appropriations as we go. To begin to earmark it, though, for agency spending is an entirely different type of earmarking. The revenues off of the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund were there for every agency, not just one. They were there to support the general fund and our general spending. And they come off of that, and each year we determine by allocation through the budget process where those funds should go. To earmark revenues off of the permanent mineral trust fund for a single agency would be a breach, if you will, of the purpose of the permanent mineral trust fund, which was to support the general fund. This is a bad amendment. I urge you to vote no.
Further discussion? Any further discussion before the sponsor takes his second time? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. President, I wholeheartedly agree with the last statement that the good president said, that basically these funds are supposed to be used for state agencies. I'll call your attention to page 2. Line 21, after appropriation. The governor may include appropriation requests from funds available within the strategic investment and projects account with his biennial budget for one-time expenditures as he deems necessary. Mr. Vice President, that isn't for the operation of government. That is not for the operation of government. That is for new projects. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. And that's the problem that I have with this particular bill. And we need to have a discussion is that, do you have it for new projects or do you have it for ongoing government expenses? And Mr. Vice President, I'll submit to you that supporting the state school system is an ongoing expansion. Supporting the investment in our roads is an ongoing provision. And also, I do put a third of it into the SIPA, mainly, Mr. Vice President, for the fact that there are some projects that we have to account for. But, Mr. Vice President, I guess vote it up, vote it down. We'll have this discussion a couple more times.
Senator Meyer. Question. Harry, for the question. All those in favor of third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 146, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 1 has failed. We're on to, we have another amendment. Third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 146. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
We need to read that in. Hang on one second. Let's read that in, Mr. Senator Meyer.
Senate File 146, third reading amendment number 2 to corrected copy. Delete the first Meyer third reading amendment.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, this goes directly to the President's contention that basically we need to use this for ongoing expenses. And that's exactly what it does. It says you're not going to have anything going to the SIPA, that all of it's going to go into the Department of Health, and that's about $90 million a year. It's a small fraction of what the Department of Health uses. But it says for the necessary expenditures at senior centers, developmental disability, and Medicaid, and that the amounts appropriated under this paragraph shall be used to reduce the biennial budget requests of the Department of Health for those specific programs. So essentially it offsets the general funds that's necessary, and it's well under the amount of funds that are necessary for these. And how it would work in the budget process is that it would just show back up into the Appropriation Committee. And so that's exactly what it does, Mr. Vice President. Ask for your favorable consideration.
Thanks, Senator Meyer. Senator Bebow.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Speaking on and against the amendment, very similar to the previous discussion we had, and the points made by the President of the Senate. The further thing that I would point out to the body's consideration on this is you can look at the third reading amendment number 2 and very important different things that we need in our state that's in our budgets, but where does this begin and where does this end? There's some things I would like to put in there too, but we further earmark, we further get into situations, and that's what the Appropriations Committee does. We go on there, we look at budgets, and then we do what we're supposed to do, which is set policy and create the opportunity for those programs in our state to be handled based on the funds and revenues we have. This just goes one step too far. You know, if you look at the intent of this bill, it's to say, okay, in these particular areas, we're going to say, we know we got the 2.5% that's coming in, that's going to the general fund. We're going to prioritize to the next level, which is 1.25% to LISRA, 1.25% to SIPA, which can be appropriated by this body. We give a discussion, we analyze it, we make good decisions. The last thing, Mr. Vice President, the point I would make is I heard my colleagues say, well, we want to have this amount of funding be for ongoing projects. Typically, I would call this one-time money. We never realize it till we see it, which is at the end of there when it's actually profiled. So if we start having earmarking on this now, not knowing if the money's even there, we create more turmoil for us in the budgeting process. I would ask you to defeat this.
Senator Bebout. Ready for the Senator? President Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. On and against the amendment, folks, all the revenue coming off the permanent trust fund is intended to go to the general fund for further appropriation and allocation on an annual basis. What we have done is divided these deposits from the general fund onto accounts that all require further appropriation. There's nobody gets a handle on the money and says, I have a predetermined right to these dollars. Giving any agency a predetermined right, if you will, from the revenues off of the permanent mill trust fund would be a bad practice. I urge you to vote no.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Majority Floor Leader brought us some good points. Where does it begin and where does it end? And the question really is that do we want it to begin with putting general fund or these monies to offset general fund appropriations, which is what the Constitution says, or do you want to go ahead and continue to propagate a system where we're spending money on capital projects and new capital projects when we haven't even paid for our old spending on this capital project, and we're already in the hole on our spending on capital projects, or are we going to continue to put $90 million a year forward? And the thing is that we know when we come into the appropriation process how much money will be in the SIPA account because the previous year we've got a pretty darn good idea what it's going to be. And we don't profile those that are anticipated, but they're not profiled, but yet we're spending them. And that's a real bad practice, whether you do it in Medicaid or whether you do it in the SIPA account, but it's particularly bothersome in the SIPA account, Mr. Vice President. Call for the question.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Meyer's motion to approve third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 146, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File, or third reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 146 has failed. We're now to third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 146. Will the reading clerk please read the bill, or the amendment?
Senate File 146, third reading amendment number 3, delete the first Meyer third reading amendment.
Thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, I move third reading amendment number 3 to Senate File 146, ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Vice President, these are different from the previous two amendments. Basically what it says is that no amount shall be credited under this paragraph if the October Consensus Revenue Estimating Group estimate for that fiscal year was less than the Consensus Revenue Estimating Group for 2013. Now, folks, in 2013, we were flush. We had money in the bank, and we had excess funds. And I certainly hope that the body will consider that we shouldn't be building new projects, asking the governor to put them in his appropriations, unless there's money there to actually pay for them. That we're not into a deficit situation, and we're going to go ahead and do capital construction anyway. So that's all this does. It just says, if we got money, fine, go ahead and build what you want to. But if we don't have money, let's just pull back a little bit and not profile that money for capital construction. That's what it does. It's not interrupting any flows if the money's there. And we got enough to run our budget. But if there's not enough to run our budget, then we can't do it.
That's a good amendment. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Mr. Vice President, let's first describe what happens if you adopt the amendment. If you adopt the amendment, then the funds will flow as they normally do, which means that the funds that we are saying that is the final 1.25% that we're directing toward the SIPA account, those funds will flow automatically on. Not automatically, at the end of the year, if they arrive, the sweep will sweep them into the LISRA account, the rainy day account. And part of the effort of this process is there has been an ongoing complaint or concern that with the sweeps in the bill, that when you come back, all of the excess revenues that were received that were not previously profiled are sweeping into the LISRA account, and the LISRA account's growing at a rate that some people think is not enough, some people think it's too much. What this does is say that if we receive this portion, instead of sweeping into the LISRA account, it will go into the SIPA account. So it allocates some of that money to be put into that account. Now, how it gets spent is up to the recommendation first that the governor... Let me back up. The only entities that can appropriate it are the legislature. But the governor is able to put together a budget. And the way we put the constraints on the statutes that allow him to make recommendations, we generally provide that use of the legislative stabilization reserve account is not available revenue for purposes of creating a balanced budget. That would have to come to us to move forward. Now, he can make recommendations as a narrative, but he still has to have a balanced budget. By allowing some of this to flow to the SIPA account, then the governor can, in fact, make recommendations on expenditure. We have, as a practice, generally said that these unprofiled revenues, when they arrive, whether they arrive in the form of dollars being going into the LISRA that we were to pull out, or that we intercepted, as you see in this year's budget, but these dollars, our practice has been made it said, let's keep those as one-time revenues for capital projects. Because, frankly, we do believe that this is the tail end of the money that's coming off of the investment earnings, and it's less predictable. It's more dangerous to put that into your goldenrod and put it into the spending that's available, because once you begin to spend your agency level to that level, then your general fund creeps up, and you can, in fact, you can creep your budget so high that there is no available resources for capital construction projects. And that's a bad deal. We talked about, I started out the session talking about the amount of money the state of Wyoming puts into the private sector, capital construction, highways. It's substantial. It's 5 to 10% of the state's gross state product every year. And that's what keeps your contractors, your local people, all employed. We have a responsibility to maintain our infrastructure, to keep capital construction going throughout the state, to make sure the entire state is healthy. It's not simply a responsibility to state employees. It's a much broader responsibility. I'd urge you to vote no on the amendment.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. For the discussion, before the sponsor takes a second time, seeing none, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Folks, I want you to put down what you're doing and listen to what I've got to say on this one. Really. Really, because this one's an important one. It really is. Imagine we're coming back in here next year and we're $460 million deficit. And I haven't heard one person stand up and dispute that number, that $460 million deficit. And I'm sure that somebody would have said, hey, hold it, he's full of it, because it's not $460 million deficit. We'll come back in here in the next budget and you get a $460 million deficit. But you got to make a decision today that's $90 million. Do you tell the governor to spend it on new capital construction? Or do you say, put it in the LSRA and we'll have a chance to vote that out to balance the budget? That's what this does. I hope you're for favorable consideration.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of third reading amendment number 3 to Senate file 146, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 3 has failed. Third reading. Division having been called for, all those in favor of third reading amendment number 3, please rise.
Now I know where.
Thank you. All those opposed, voting no on Senate File 146, Third Reading Amendment Number 3, please rise.
Well, that was a good amendment. The last one was. The first two were a little frivolous. The last one was a good amendment.
Though it was weak by the nose, Third Reading Amendment Number 3 has failed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, the discussions over the past few minutes have crystallized in my mind an uneasiness that I have about this bill. And let me see if I can explain it. You look at the section on the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund, Article 16, Section 9. And it talks about the tax, and the tax be deposited in the permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund. The fund, including all monies deposited in the fund from whatever source, shall remain inviolate. The monies in the fund shall be invested, prescribed by legislature, and all income from fund investments shall be deposited by the state treasurer in the general fund on an annual basis. Mr. Vice President, this bill earmarks to other than the general fund. Now, and I want to understand how what's proposed in this bill can be reconciled with the constitutional obligation to put the permanent mineral fund investments in the general fund. Now, I know it says on page 6, line 17, et cetera, that the funds are appropriated from the general fund subject to the following, and the following is the earmarks. That language strikes me as sort of a ruse. You're going to earmark, and you just say you're appropriating out of the general fund to earmark. I don't think it really ever gets the general fund with that language. Now, I can see the argument that the LISRA account supports the general fund, and you could almost argue, I think you could argue, that that account is essentially an account within the general fund. We can appropriate out of it the same as we can the general fund. But I don't think the same is true of this SIPA account, which is earmarked, for, as I understand it, for some of the capital construction. So, Mr. Vice President, frankly, I'm considering whether or not to vote for or against this bill, and the source of my reservation is that we're, instead of leaving the money in the general fund, we're earmarking it to an account where it will be spent and will not be part of the general fund. And I have some serious reservations about that, and I'd like to ask an explanation of how this bill squares with the language in the Constitution.
Thanks, Senator Scott. Senator Nicholas, President.
Mr. Vice President, that's a great, those are great questions. It is true that the revenues, all the revenues from the Permanent Mineral Trust Fund are required to be paid to the general fund. And if you look at, if you remember this sheet, if you still have it, or you can find it in the database, data book, this is what's described as the spending policy reserve account for the amount. Now, we've already had discussions, for example, about the reserve accounts and the monies that get appropriated into the spending policy reserve accounts, that is the SPRAW accounts. And that's why when you begin to look at these profile sheets, all revenue goes into the general fund, every single dollar. But from that revenue, generally what we say is that the first 5% will stay in the general fund, and then above 5%, the monies then move into, the balance moves into the reserve account. But that's what would be described as a further crediting. So it actually arrives in the general fund first, then a portion is carved off and goes, or not carved off, but the excess goes into the reserve account, and then you have the spending policy mechanisms. So that all the funds must flow through the general fund, and we've been doing this for the SPRAW for many years. Now, with respect to this bill, if we adopt it, all the money will continue to go to the general fund. But once it arrives there, and the money has to first arrive and be credited, then it's further credited by the Treasurer's office to a separate account. In some instances, it will be further credited on down after it arrives there into the LISRA account, and in other instances to the SIPA account. Now, to make certain that we all understand, there are no continuing appropriations of any sort out of the SIPA account. The only dollars that are appropriated from the SIPA are those dollars after they've arrived. And we have generally treated those as one-time monies in the past. We're not required to do that. We could use the SIPA money. We could put it back into the general fund. We could use it to pay for the deficits, anything we choose to do. But the point that we have been making is right now these are not profiled on our goldenrod. And the reason they're not profiled is because the Treasurer has been generally unwilling to forecast the capital gains. And the only forecasting we've had are of fixed income, which has been about 2.1 to 2.5%. And so the funds, because they're unprofiled, when they, and generally they are anticipated, and they have arrived. But because of the sweeps, we sweep the excess funds out of the general fund and the budget reserve account. We've been sweeping that into the legislative stabilization reserve account. And there's been a discussion, is that too much to sweep into one account? What about these one-time ongoing, these one-time needs, whether they be for the capital or otherwise? Or is it appropriate then to better identify these into categories? And I submit to you that what we're doing here is we're saying one-third, or the first 2.5%, which is the profile amount, let's go ahead and allow that to build into the goldenrod because it's profiled, and that becomes part of your budget every year. And through budget creep, it may eventually that may be eroded, or that money will be earmarked, or a better word is it'll become committed to meeting your biennial obligations. But then let's take some and put it into the LISRA account for the next 5 to 10 years for a cushion so that we can help build that rainy day account. And then let's carve out some and say, instead of just, when that money arrives, instead of just letting it hang out there and then be swept into the LISRA account or to be used for and not really recognized, let's pay attention to that. Let's segregate it after it arrives and make it available so we remember what it is. We can call it one-time monies, we can call it is, but it's in a separate account. And when we come down, we can really talk about its expenditure. Folks, if you've been here in the last 10 years, one of the real advantages of our budgeting is that we've always had excess revenues in excess of our forecast. And those are the monies that we've used to add to highways, community colleges, UW. Excess revenues, the revenues in excess of the forecast. As this budget plateaus, I submit to you, you want to build into your budget some unforecasted revenues going into accounts for one-time projects. You can always under for ongoing. But it's also good to segregate some money to make sure that you're always continuing to help be the fuel or provide fuel, if you will, to the construction industry, to any other industry that is looking at it. Maybe that's where you, in the future, fund economic development, but they're dollars that we're saying we're not going to allow them just to build into the goldenrod, into the general fund component, so we lose sight of them. We're going to carve them out and make sure we always have some one-time revenues for special needs.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Vice President, I would add to that one comment with regard to the state treasurer. I think state treasurer is very wise to refuse to forecast the capital gains earnings off the permanent funds because, Mr. Vice President, that is quite volatile and, number one, difficult to forecast, and there may well be some years where there aren't, are not, those kind of capital gains earnings. We all know that whereas investing in common equities is more profitable on average over the years and has been, there will be years where you just, you know, the market goes down, especially when it's as high as it is right now. It may well go down for a time. You may have a year or two where there simply aren't any, and we don't want to have forecasts and go spend earnings that we don't have. Mr. Vice President, there's another aspect of this bill we haven't talked about much. I have some reservations about the lack of the money going in the general fund on this part of the bill. There's also some things with regard to the school fund and I don't fully understand them. I think it's an attempt to deal in part with the shortfall we can see coming in school capital construction. But I'd like to be corrected if I'm wrong on that.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Meyer.
A couple of questions I have, and speaking about shortfalls outside of the school capital construction, in 18 to 23 months, we're going to get a shortfall in our school foundational funding. And the $460 million I was talking about, I think, did not include the school foundation funding. But as I understand mineral evaluations, that we get our severance tax on the production today, and then most of our school funding is on ad valorem, which takes place from 18 to 23 months after you get the severance tax. And so in the next biennium, that's when the $45 to $50 oil is going to hit, you know, 18 to 24 months from now. I like the way the SIPA has worked in the last few years. I'm just really concerned that we have so many other obligations out there that this might be the wrong time to earmark it. And these are deep concerns. There's nothing wrong with the way that SIPA has worked and the projects that we've had. We've done a lovely job putting some money into UW and in different areas, and it certainly was sorely needed. But there's so many other needs out there that are one-time funding. One-time funding for community colleges. And their needs, which they're at the low end of the deal. One-time funding for your local governments, who they're not going to get anything this year because, frankly, we've spent it on capital construction. And at some point in time, you got to ask yourself this question. What do you care more about, buildings or the people in them?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Folks, the fact that we may determine that a portion of this money should go to the SIPA does not mean that it's not available for appropriation by this legislature. And in fact, that's exactly what you're going to see next week with regards to the SIPA. We have taken that money out of the SIPA, about $21 million, and we're using it to balance our budget. So whether or not it lands in the SIPA or not is still up to us to use it and to allocate it, and we can still do that. So don't get hung up on this whole idea that somehow this money is just going to go to build more buildings. It doesn't necessarily have to have that way. And we have, in an attempt to balance our budget this year, have taken that money with the approval of the governor, although it's not necessary that the governor approve, but he did approve that we could utilize those monies in the SIPA account now, so that we can balance our budget.
For your second time, anybody else before the president takes his second time? Seeing none? President, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. The question was made with respect to how this operates with the school foundation program. And much the same as this account, remember this. We are not earmarking these monies for expenditure. We are earmarking the flow of the money. We are crediting the flow of the money into other reserve accounts, other funds, from which the legislature must appropriate for expenditure. It's a big, big change. Now, part of the primary purpose of this bill is a recognition that over time, when we first started this program out, and you had investment earnings coming in at 5, 6, 7%, it was different then. If you say that we're going to plan on a 5, it started out as a 7%, actually started out as 8% is what our target revenues off that we were going to spend. If you're in fixed income is coming in at a pretty high rate, you don't see the gap that we're seeing now. Now with interest on fixed income lower, we're seeing this substantial unprofiled amount. And you hear this discussion about what to do with the unrealized or capital gains. Should the Treasurer today sell some stock in order to create an immediate bump of revenue to flow into the general fund. I submit to you that's not what was intended by the whole spending policy. The spending policy was to direct the treasurer, you make your long-term decisions based upon long-term economic approach. And we, the legislature, will confine the use of the money in methods that will not make demands on it, on you to walk out one day and sell all your stock in one company to give us a bump in revenue. But we also have this issue that not all these funds are profiled. And we've also created these sweeps. And there was a reason for it, because we were trying to use the sweeps to build up the Legislative Stabilization Reserve account. And all of these unprofiled revenues right now are being captured in the sweeps. And what this says is we do not want those sweeps to capture all these monies. Now, there is one element here that I would say that we've really not talked about. Let me see if I can explain it explicitly or clearly. Suppose you have $100 million that's unforecasted and it's not on your profile sheet. And suppose it's further earmarked or credited to this account, which is the SIP account and or the LISR account. Suppose it's in the general fund and it never gets credited. If you had a loss of revenue, if the Craig Group came back and estimated in the middle of summer we have a $100 million decline in revenue, the Craig Group, if the $100 million had already arrived in the general fund, the Craig Group could say, well, there was a $100 million decline, but we've now received another $100 million that's in the general fund, so it's a wash. By further crediting these to these accounts, in that event, you might actually, that $100 million would not be available simply to fuel the general fund because there's a further credit of the amounts to these special accounts. That would spark, if that created a deficit on that day, it would spark another requirement for the governor to reduce his budgets or for the legislature to come back into special session. So there are incidental consequences to these decisions. But I submit to you that what we're trying to do through this bill is really regulate these earnings so we monitor them, we know where they're going, and they aren't spent inadvertently. In that sense, I think it's a good bill. It gets away from the discussion of capital gains. I urge your support of the bill.
Thanks, Senator Nicholas. Ready for the question. Senate File 146, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Anderson, District 2.
Aye.
Anderson, District 28.
No.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns excused. Case.
Aye.
Christian.
Aye.
Christensen, aye. Coe?
Aye.
Hooper?
Aye.
Kraft?
Aye.
Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich?
Aye.
Escobel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson excused. Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Meyer? Pappas.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Scott.
No.
Von Platern.
Aye.
Wasserberger.
Aye.
President Nicholas.
Aye.
Closing vote. No to I. Escobel. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 23 aye, 4 no, 3 excused.
Senate File 146, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 146 has passed the Senate. Mr. President.
Thank you. Do we have any messages? Senator Hastert.
Mr. President, having voted on the prevailing side of Senate File 123 and pursuant to Senate Rule 12-10, I ask for immediate reconsideration.
What was the Senate file number again, please?
123, Mr. President.
The question is, shall the vote on Senate file 123 be reconsidered? It's non-debatable. Senator Case.
The point of order is I believe we have to say the name of the bill.
You're right. Thank you very much. The motion is to reconsider immediately Senate File 123, which is collective bargaining for firefighters. The motion is non-debatable. The vote before you is, shall the vote be reconsidered? An aye vote means it will be reconsidered. A no vote means that the vote cannot be will not be reconsidered. Everybody understand the motion in front of them? Non-debatable. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson District 2.
No.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard. Bebout?
Aye.
Burns excused. Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Kraft? Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
No.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson excused. Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed on reconsideration, 17 aye, 10 no, 3 excused.
By your vote, the vote on Senate File 123, collective bargaining for firefighters, will now be reconsidered. Roll call on the third reading vote for the reconsideration vote for Senate File 123, collective bargaining for firefighters. An aye vote is to pass the bill. Roll call.
Anderson District 2.
No.
Anderson District 28.
Aye.
Barnard.
No.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns excused. Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Kraft. Dockstetter?
Aye.
Driscoll excused. Emmerich?
No.
Escobel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
Aye.
Johnson excused. Kinski?
Aye.
Landon?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Pappas?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross? Rothfuss?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Platern?
Aye.
Wasserberger?
Aye.
President Nicholas?
Aye.
Closing vote?
Scott,
aye to no. Closing vote? Closing?
Kinski,
aye to no. Closing vote? Closing? Vote closed. 13 aye, 14 no, 3 excused.
Senate File 123, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members that elected the Senate, Senate File 123 has failed to pass the Senate. Do we have any messages? No messages from anybody. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we have a special event. Is Katie around? Would Katie please come out? Where is Katie? Come on up here. Katie, the microphone here, and but before we do that, Katie, we have a resolution that we've all signed for you. Let's see if my reading how well it does. It's a resolution recognizing you and your service as collator clerk to the Wyoming State Senate, and to honor your. Oh, I thought it was 20th birthday. Yeah, I'll bet you like that. Be it resolved by the Senate of the 63rd Legislature of the State of Wyoming, whereas Katie came into this world 90 years ago today. Whereas Katie has served as collator clerk for the Senate since January 1979, a total of 36 years. Katie was hired by D.D. Merritt and told the job would be only last 5 years because everyone would be using computers by then.
A little slow.
When D.D. retired in 2004, Katie was in her 25th year of employment. Katie told D.D. it was the longest 5 years she'd ever had a job. You didn't mention your children, I guess. Whereas Katie's service as collator clerk has been exceptional and fully appreciated by the Wyoming senators, whereas this resolution has the support of the members of the Senate of the Wyoming Legislature who have signed them their name here too, now therefore be it resolved by the undersigned members of the Senate of the Legislature of the State of Wyoming, Section 1, that we acknowledge Katie has served the Senate of the State of Wyoming with dignity and respect. That we are fortunate to know Katie and come encounter her as our friend. Section 3, that Katie's sense of humor, kindness, and positive outlook on life has endeared her to many past, present, and future senators, members, and staffs. Therefore, with great appreciation, we recognize Katie Heaton for the outstanding dedication and support of the State of Wyoming on this fifth day of February, 2015. And wish her a very, very happy birthday.
Thank you.
Now, before we give you the mic, we're going to sing to you a happy birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Katie. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, yes. Sure.
You know, it's not, it's pretty unusual to have someone that's spent 90 years old and done so much for the Senate, but there's another gentleman that wanted to be here and be sure and participate with us. And
oh, wait a minute.
No stranger.
Katie's going to lead us that. You're getting ahead of the game.
Oh, I'm ahead of the game?
You're ahead of the game.
Am I ruled out of order?
You're ruled out of order. You're out of order.
One time, Mr.
President. One time. I take the liberty. No. It's right now. It's Katie's moment, and she really wants to introduce her loved ones to us. Katie, your mic should be live. Just pull it down towards you, and it's your time right now.
Thank you. Should I introduce the governor first? I think it's really sweet of all of you to be here to celebrate my 90th birthday, and I celebrate it every day of the year. So, thank you. It's beautiful. All these beautiful people that I love to collate for. And all of the wonderful staff that makes you look real good. And our queen of the Senate. Thank you. And thank all of you. It's just been a beautiful day. And I love being here every year to watch what goes on. And I think everybody should watch it and realize how many hours you really put in. And I love my job. And I'd like to also say welcome to the Senate to our governor. And to my children, Robert Heaton, 1 year at Wyoming, 4 years at West Point, and 28 years retired. His wife graduated from hygiene college in Oregon after 28 years in the Air Force, and she's retired. And Joe and Brittany,
there we go.
Okay, well then I'll go to Mary Kay, my daughter, graduated from the University of Wyoming and 40 years with United Airlines. And her husband, Craig, is semi-retired from Cheyenne and Laramie Beverage, and he's enjoying his retirement hunting. And then there's Todd, who is now the president of Cheyenne Laramie Beverage, and his fiancée, Cassie Thompson, who's a teacher and a graduate of Wyoming. And Todd graduated from Wyoming. And then Brittany is the co-owner of Cheyenne Laramie Beverage. Her husband Joe, a cement contractor, and my great grandson, who already has his Wyoming sweater and boots on, he's ready to go. Brittany graduated from Wyoming, and then her twin sister graduated from Wyoming and is working in Denver. And that's my beautiful family.
Hey, her.
That's all right.
That's pretty special. And all of you beautiful people out in the hall, thank you. I think that's all, and I thank you, Mr. President.
Well, we all love you. You're supposed to, you shared your birthday with somebody else in the room, and you're going to...
Yes, I've been a twin for many years. I remember the morning he was born. Happy birthday, Tony.
Happy birthday.
Let's sing the pony.
Well, will you lead us with the birthday song for Tony?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tony. Happy birthday to you. Propaganda.
Yeah, here it is. Don't take it to lunch. It'll get food on it.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Well, we all love you. Thank you.
And I love all of you.
Hey, hold that.
Hold that.
Hold it.
Hold
it.
Oh,
there we go.
So you don't look old.
Oh, good.
Yeah, well, yeah, beautiful. You get it? Thank you.
Thank you, Katie, and thank your members of the family for coming to share that with us. We sure appreciate all your coming here.
Beautiful, and I deserve every minute of it.
I had that all figured out. I was going to change my vote.
Do that all the messages we have?
But I just got to. It's all right.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. It was still the right
thing to do. Thank you, Mr. President. I move that we stand recessed until 2 p.m.
Announcements. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Revenue Committee, number three committee. We're supposed to be meeting right now, but we're going to bump that to 1 o'clock. There's some conflicts with members and other committees and bills that need to be presented. But we will pick up Senate File 124, Sales and Use Tax Enforcement, Senate File 144, Microbreweries Minimum Barrel Requirement, and Senate File 96, Reconsideration Special Investigator.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Appropriations Committee will meet as soon as we can grab some food and take it with us to our committee room. Apologize for eating in front of anybody that has a re-referral, but in order to accommodate the Chairman of Revenue Committee, we will take up Senate File 145 immediately, Hospital Uncompensated Care, re-referral. Then we'll go to Senate File 133, Bighorn Sheep Relocation. Then we'll go to Senate File 121, Career and Technical Training Grants, re-referral. And Senate File 138, Small Business Innovation Research Matching Grants, re-referral.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number five, Agriculture, State, and Public Lands, will meet today upon adjournment in room S-15 to address House Bill 8, Landowner Indemnification, House Bill 70, Engrossed, Omnibus Water Bill Construction.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Judiciary Committee number one will meet tomorrow in room S-1 at 8 o'clock to take up House bills. House Bill 14, Electronic Citations. House Bill 15, Restoration of Voting Rights by Department of Corrections. House Bill 16, Offenses Against Public Administration. House Bill 17, Sexual Assault Protection Orders. And House Bill 18, Drone Protection Act.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number nine, Minerals and Economic Development, will meet at Friday, 20 minutes afternoon recess, room S-18, right above us to the right. Senate File 135, Misclassification of Employees Penalties, and House Bill 55, Engrossed, Solid Waste Program Amendments.
Any additional motion or announcements? There being none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The Senate shall stand in recess until 2 p.m.